You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. We'll be talking to Father Michael White this afternoon. He's got some interesting things to say about church announcements. He's always up to some interesting innovations in his church, Antimonia, Maryland. We'll look at that and see what perhaps we could do to emulate that in our home parishes, influence, encourage, whatever we can do. Speaking of which, I want to talk about what's next after abortion is eradicated in the sense of being illegal, legislatively eradicated. What do we do? What do we do as pro-lifers asking this question, getting Facebook responses? We'll talk about that. Disturbing, I would say at best, remarks and video from President Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast. He's a polarizing guy. I get it. There are those who love him. There are those who hate him. I'm just confused. I got to be honest. As well as I know him as an author, which I do know him well as an author, this one is just he's a showman. I get it. But we'll talk specifically about what I heard. Which, you know, I get accused of hearing things improperly all the time. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Been having a lot of conversations. Some like this, some don't. I get it. It's a divisive issue, but I'm trying to discover unity, and I'm trying to discover the best path forward when it comes to what do we do when the changes. This is, I think, on a course to radically change. Time will tell, but we're seeing states that have banned abortions. They've effectively introduced legislation. Some of it's in court battles, but it's happening. We've seen a promise to defund Planned Parenthood by an executive order, and I believe the power is there in Congress to act on that and see it happen. And we could potentially see a reversal of Roe v. Wade. This is kind of a pro-lifer's dream come true scenario, that all of this happens. Now, I have contended, yes, with contention from the beginning on all of this, that doesn't solve a problem. There are those who will argue with me. I understand. You will say access, access, access. That's what creates demand. I don't think in this case access creates demand. I think demand creates demand, and that demand is fueled by fear. And that fear, as long as it is allowed to continue to perpetuate, accelerate, and ultimately end in this ability to incinerate, right? It's going to finally find an end. It's going to do that unless there's significant intervention. Now, I know there's a lot of groups out there doing a lot of great stuff, and I don't think anybody is thinking about an end game right now. I don't think they are. I think they're thinking we're doing what we do is what we do. We'll always do what we do. Been doing it for 40 years. But it could change. It could change, and then what? And my real challenge here is, if you're going to do something differently, then why wait? Why wait? Because what is it that you're going to do? Now, I know nobody really understands. I've posted this on Facebook, and I know I have some of the most difficult times expressing what I'm asking or what I'm getting at. I understand, because there are those who are like, well, we'll move on to this and we'll get this other thing, or they're not really understanding the depth of the question I'm asking, which is, if you would do something different, or I should say, when you're forced to do something different, what is that going to be, and how does it involve the issue? How does it involve really addressing the issue? Because it's one thing to say, okay, we'll do that, we'll switch focus over here. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there will require a deeper focus, a focus like you've never had to focus before, because now legislation is in your favor. You've gotten your dream. It's all happening. Your problem still isn't solved. Will not be solved. I promise you, it will not be solved. You may have a statistical drop in abortion numbers because of access. The demand will be there, and there will be those who will find solutions some way, somehow. Even if it's homemade abortion recipes that they found online, you're going to have a problem. So the question is, as it's always been in my mind, this has never not been the question. The question is not, how do we fight to make abortion illegal? How do we make abortion unthinkable? That's a cultural mind shift, and it's got to come from some sort of real resourcing into the understanding of women in crisis. Because they're going to seek that end goal some way, somehow, with your help, without your help, with legislation, without legislation, access or not, it doesn't matter. When they're in that situation that has been now for 40 plus years resolved by a legal abortion, when they are in that situation, that would have, because of the cultural focus we've had, that this is the solution, this is how it works, they're still going to be in the mindset. It's going to take a generation, even of effective work, to change that cultural mindset of a true first choice abortion mindedness that has been drummed into our minds for over 40 years. So we've already got a couple of dynamics here that are that at first have created this culture, if you will, culture of death, as it's been called. But then we've got this, we don't know anything else. This is the only reality we know. Not only for the culture, but also for those who are combating this culture, if you will, those who are working as pro-lifers, trying to primarily enact legislation, affect legislation. That seems to be the primary focus. But what if the focus was, how do we help this woman? How do we help this woman before she gets to that point? There's got to be a way. There's got to be a solution. There's got to be a way to come into this and say, look, one way or another, this is going to be fine. One way or another. That's the message that these people need to hear. Men, women, alike, in a crisis situation where you're convinced at that moment every bet imaginable that you ever had is off, because you are so completely freaked out. You're so completely just shocked and astounded that this has happened and it's the last thing you wanted. It's amazing to me that the exact same dynamic that could be the most joyous and most beautiful, amazing thing to discover can also be the absolute most devastating. And it's all a matter of timing, and it's all a matter of resourcing. So if it's time and resources that are the issue, how do we work on the time and the resources? That's what we should be working on. Because I promise you, in that situation, the last thing you're thinking is, oh, what's the legislative process now? How close are we to having Roe v. Wade overturned? Is abortion legal or illegal in my state? None of that matters. None of that matters. The first question is, it's not even a question. It's a very unfortunate reaction that says, we can't do this. This cannot be done. This can't be happening to me. This can't be happening now. I don't have the means to do this. Don't have the wherewithal to do this. This is the wrong time for this to happen. Now what needs to happen is stronger stories of those who have been down this road, who have experienced this, to say, you know what, I thought the same thing, but I tell you what, it's not at all. That's just fear talking. It's just something that's trying to scare you out of one of the best decisions you could ever make. If we had those voices, and that was the prevailing voice, then shortly, in relatively short order, we would find that that reaction is gone, because that fear is now eradicated. As long as we have the fear, as long as we have the perceived lack of resources or the perceived wrong time, we're going to continue to have a demand. So we got to work on the time and the resource element. We've got to make sure that they know that this time is just as good as any. It's actually, it might be your only time. Dear, I'm sorry to tell you, this may be it. Take advantage of this and allow this to happen. Don't think that you get the rest of your life to live and you could have more kids later. You don't know that, darling. You don't know that. Let's try to find a way to figure out a way to make this work. And let's listen to all of these people who have been right there where you are. Because they were there and they were scared. You know what? Their lives are great now. Things are going really well. And what they thought was the biggest challenge ever that they could ever face in their life proved to be the biggest blessing. Because the real big challenges are coming later. I'm sorry. This one is a minor hurdle. Come on and let's get through this. Let's work on this together and realize that we got everything you need. Everything you need. What do you need? You tell me. If you need it, we got it. You're going to be okay. Now, I don't know. I'm no abortion counselor, and that would probably fail miserably, that conversation. But that's at least the mindset and the attitude. We got to look at those two elements. It's just those two. If they know they got the resourcing and they know it can be the right time, everything else is inconsequential. Nothing else matters. We've solved their two biggest hurdles. And that resourcing can look like a lot of different dynamics. It may not be money. It may not be what do I do with my career or my college or my high school or whatever it may be. What do I do with my family? Well, that's a resource element that can be resourced. What if instead of abortion counselors, quote unquote, who escort women into an abortuary, what if those individuals who had to face their parents call and introduce themselves and say, Mr. Smith, I know you don't know me, but I would really like to talk to you about something that I experienced several years ago that may be of importance to you. Break the ice. You want to escort a woman into a transition, into something that could be amazing for her? Let's talk about that. Let's find a way to break that ice with her family so now she's not going it alone. And she's not having to face that fear because you've been down that road and you know it came out okay. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Michael White, Church of the Nativity in Timonium, Maryland, joins us once a week. Father, how are you?
Oh, how are you doing today?
Good, terrific. So you want to talk about announcements, these things that Mass.
That's my current pet peeve. You know, We had announcements here at our church after communion, and the priest, the celebrant, would get up and just read from the bulletin whatever he felt like, whatever he thought was worthy of special attention or what some special interest lobbied him to mention. And they very interesting, mostly parish meetings and fundraisers that weren't of interest or didn't apply to most people. And as a consequence, you know, a lot of people left Mass after communion. They just walked out.
Wow.
Reading for us, we thought that was kind of bad and disrespectful, but from their perspective, it's kind of understandable.
Yeah, I never thought that it was the announcements that would drive them out the door. I never really thought about that.
If it's something that's inherently uninteresting or irrelevant to the vast majority of people, why would you expect them to stay, right? Oftentimes, these announcements are just a repetition of what they've already got loaded into the bulletin, what they've already got plastered to the homepage of their website, and it's completely unnecessary. Mm. So a couple of years ago, we transitioned to a different format. We actually pre-record our announcements, and we play them parts. And some object to that, saying, well, people aren't there yet, you know, because people come late to Mass or they come at the last minute. But you can actually build a culture where people come early to hear the announcements because they're interested in them.
So, and you do it in some sort of fashion that's different, that's more entertaining, that's presentational. I mean, how do you manage that?
Well, first of all, we branded them. Branding programs, and we've branded our children's programs and our kids' programs and everything that we can brand, we brand because it really helps with engagement. Can get lost or overlooked, but a brand can build an audience. So we call our announcements 5 before 5 before. It's the five announcements that we make before Mass starts, and it's just five. It's not 6 or 7 or 8. It's 5, and we bill them as the 5 things you need to know this week. Church-wide announcements that are of potential interest to anyone or everyone in the parish. So, for instance, we would not be announcing the next parish council meeting.
Right.
But we would announce a small group launch or a new ministry that people could get into. So they're church-wide announcements that are of potential interest to everybody. The other thing about our announcements is I don't do them. In the Mass, in Catholic parishes, it's like it's a one-man show a lot of time.
Sure.
It's Father doing everything from the announcements to the consecration to, you know, and one voice overused like that can diminish its effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Other voices can be of interest and or attract fresh interest. So we have two people who are the announcers. One's lectors who's particularly talented, very attractive, very engaging, very refreshing kind of personality. And the other's a guy, and he just looks like the guy next door. And what we like to think is that these two together kind of represent who we are as a parish. So you come in as a guest or a visitor and you see these two up on the screen, you're immediately saying, okay, that's who these people are. And you're making a judgment about whether you want to be a part of this. And when you see people who look like you, who sound like you, or like what you want to be and think of yourself, you're attracted to that.
And how long have you been doing this? Is this something new-ish, or has it been part of this whole rebuild?
We just started in September.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we have been very consciously sort of monitoring and how well it's doing in the congregation. And really, it's quite noticeable that when those announcements start, attention is on them.
Hmm. Have people started coming earlier? Have you noticed earlier arrivals, less late arrivals? Or
Absolutely. We've actually made inroads into that habitual problem in church world of people coming late. How about that?
That's an accomplishment. I think we both agree. That's
But even if you didn't record it, we record it because we have the technology to do it. But even if your parish doesn't have the technology to do that, you could still have an announcer or a couple get up before Mass and present the announcements and, you know, just write them out ahead of time, practice them a couple of times so that you've got facility with them. And I guarantee that you will improve your parish communication and you will improve the effectiveness of the pulpit announcement.
Wow. And do you think that there's, and I hear what you're saying, anybody could do it, but do you think that there's something kind of particularly of interest, as odd as it sounds, because it is on video and people are trained to pay more attention to that? I mean, could it have something to do with that?
That's true. It does. We think it's more effective on video because you can add production values to it with the lighting and the background, the set that we have created for it. All of that adds value and attracts interest.
Mm-hmm.
But writing them out ahead of time and making sure that they're well done and practicing it are tremendous values as well.
And here's the other measurement I'm curious about. Do you find that when it's in the five, one of the five, that it gets response that maybe something just floating in the bulletin wouldn't get?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Hmm. And as a result, there's competition for those five, among staff and parish organizations. You know, a place in the five is very coveted.
Yeah, you were talking about lobbying of the special interests. How do you handle that?
I delegate it. I delegate it.
I think a lottery might be at some point in order.
Okay.
No, just saying. You know, may want to think about that. So this, it's interesting because now the other side of that, which I didn't ask. Do people stay to the end of Mass now because they're not going to be bored by announcements?
Well, I tell you, we're working on that. We're working on that.
You got another featurette that you could do at the very end of Mass, like a conclusion to the beginning of the video?
It's a work in progress. We actually do a thing at the end of Mass we call end notes. And somebody from staff, after the prayer, after communion, somebody comes out and they make one announcement. They offer one single thing for people to take away. And usually it's lifted from the homily.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's lifted from the homily or the weekend message. What we always say, what do we want them to know and what do we want them to do? And so at the end of Mass, we repeat again what we wanted them to know and what we wanted them to do. So a couple of weekends ago, we were talking about mercy and forgiveness. And we want them to know that God is a God of mercy, and we want them to consider going to confession this coming week. What do we want them to know? What do we want them to do? And the majority of people will hang around, hear that again, because they know it's coming. And we're working on building that culture.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's cool to see the innovations and to see that, you know, even with the success, I think that you could say that you've had, that you know this parish has grown, you know that you're doing a lot of things right. People are looking at you across the country and saying, what are those guys doing up there and how do we emulate it? That you're still improving. You're still looking at ways to even improve upon that. That's impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And every single week, we sit down and review this and evaluate ourselves on it.
Yeah. And, well, good. And I'm curious to see how, I guess, are you, so well, I'm running out of time, but I'm curious about that end note thing, how actionable with that, it's if there's a way to even improve on that one even more. And I don't mean to, maybe we can pick up on that next time because we're totally running out of time.
Sure.
And I apologize. But
okay.
Father Michael White of Church in the Nativity, thank you so much. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back at Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Arnold Schwarzenegger and the president trading jabs, it appears. And they both seem serious, quite frankly. I find it very interesting to see this reaction from Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, you got two tough guy, testosterone-laden going at each other guys here. What do you expect, right? Neither of them are going to back down. And it's a very odd dynamic that we've created now from another odd dynamic. And not helpful. And you look at the Schwarzenegger video that's out there on ABC News. It kind of seems like he's joking, but then again, he's kind of seeming like he's got a real bone of contention. And again, this is just not productive, not remotely productive. So Trump is at the National Prayer Breakfast making these jabs at the prayer breakfast against Arnold Schwarzenegger with the joke, hey, we got to pray for him because of his ratings, right? So he goes on to say a number of things that are interesting and some that I would have to applaud, because it certainly seems like he does mention the fact that Muslims are under a particular type of oppression or persecution. He does mention that, and I applaud that. Thank you. Thank you for doing that, President Trump. But at the same time, there's an odd sort of dismissiveness. He talks about the problems. And then interestingly, it almost seems like he admits that he's created the problems. And he talks about these secret phone calls he's making, and we don't need to worry. No, you don't need to worry. Nothing to see here. Which I think that most conservatives would say they had problems with things like Obamacare. Nobody knew what was in it. It just got passed. It was just blown through legislatively without any real review. And then, of course, no Republican had any say in that matter. So now we've kind of got what appears to be a separation of powers issue here, where you've got a president who's kind of what's it called? Running run shot. Is that what it's called? I don't know. What's that term? Just kind of barreling through any type of policy that would potentially hold this back to the point of now it's as though there's a monarchy. Now, as I say in everything, time will tell how all of this shapes up, but I think we know that there are new tensions. There are new tensions in the world because of the actions of this president. But he seems to be of the mindset that everything's going to be okay, as he says, going to work it all out, but there is something tense that he has brought to the equation. And it's certainly not getting better, because now we have countries at least flexing their muscles. Iran, undoubtedly, not backing down, saying they're going to continue their missile testing. And the question that I have, as I've had from the beginning, is this making a world a better place? Is it truly making our world a better place? Or is it maybe not? And I know that there are those, Leo, come on, it's got to get worse before it gets better. It's been bad. Just rooting out some problems and making it work. We don't know that. You don't know that. Maybe it will. And if so, God bless him. That's great. But I don't know how being a provocateur, how being an instigator, one who seems to kind of throw weight around, how is this going to solve things? Because America's going to get tough again and people are going to fear Trump. Okay, then what happens when the president comes in that they don't fear? There's all that tension that's been mounting for 4 or 8 years, and I promise you, vendettas are patient, incredibly patient. There are those who will wait for the right time after a long time. So what happens next? We get tough now, we get tough and throw weight around, and then 4 years, 8 years go by and someone decides to strike. Kind of like what happened on September 11th, if you have forgotten, never forget. I had a conversation with some Congolese refugees. I'm privileged to be on the board of directors for Catholic Charities in my diocese and working on a project with the refugees from the Congo. And I found it fascinating because I learned a lot in an hour of hanging out with these guys as we began the preliminary conversations on this project. And one of them had been in the U.S. for about 10 years. The other just under 3. And then at this 3-year, and then the other one newly arrived. So in this, there's a process of citizenship, because refugees are not illegal immigrants. They are refugees. They are here through a program of resettlement. They have been vetted very carefully. They are here. They could be, because there is a path to citizenship, a fast track to citizenship for anyone who has come in through the refugee program. These individuals, I found it fascinating, aren't interested in U.S. citizenship. Now, when you hear that, you think, well, how dare they? What, they don't want to be Americans, right? First off, they didn't choose to be American. Please realize that. They were leaving strife in their country. They went through a process, a program, and had no idea where they may end up. They didn't know. They didn't know they were bound for the U.S. They had no idea. They just showed up in the country that was chosen through the refugee program. So they're here, could certainly have a path to citizenship, but they are saying, no, they don't want to do that. Why? Because they'll never be allowed back in their country if they become Americans. And if they want to enact real change, if they want to have the opportunity, they can patiently wait it out here through the process for the right time to go back and make change happen. patient, patiently waiting for the opportunity. So don't think that every time we flex our muscles, that ripples are not made and felt by that flexing. And when we do this enough and with great enough force, there will be reaction to that. Now, I've said many times recently in conversations with others, because I get a lot of friction. I don't mind friction. Friction is, can be traction. It can be traction. Without friction, you have no traction, right? So use that friction as traction to move you on to the next step and on to the next spin into something further, right? Let it propel you. Let it be the launch pad. Let it be the starting gate to kick off as a runner digs down into that gate post and kicks off of that. Let that friction be that traction. But if we've got more than friction, because now we're being punitive or insulting even, or whatever it may be, to individuals who are willing to be amazingly patient, waiting it out, then we got an issue. Yes, friction, sharpening stones and iron and all of that analogy. Proverbs 27:17, the beautiful reality that yes, we do make each other stronger. But we don't make each other safer when we have these type of attitudes that could potentially destabilize. And I'm not one to worry. I have concerns, as you know. People hate me for my concerns, but I have concerns about Trump just because I've read his work enough to think, really? But this is where we are. This is our reality. And we're now beginning to make waves by flexing muscles. And as we do that, and as we perhaps escalate tensions, it's not making anything better. Not yet. And maybe there's a miraculous plan for all of this to come around and world peace, right? Is it world peace or is it world peas? What are we going to get in the end? So at this point, I think some very unprecedented comments, maybe even very unpresidential comments, depending on how you look at it, at this prayer breakfast. And yes, we pray for solutions. We pray for real hope. But it's got to start, I think, with taking care of those most vulnerable. We show that. We maintain that. We continue that dynamic. That's how we gain respect. They're the ones who've got the strength that don't need to flex their muscles in any other way other than picking others up. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.